We're back on The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega. If you've been convicted of a crime, but you think DNA might exonerate you, it can be an uphill battle to get a judge to reopen your case. Laws vary by state to state, and here in New York, where the laws are some of the least stringent, you may never get a second chance to test DNA evidence if the prosecution doesn't think the results would change the verdict. But Renee Lynch is trying to fight this. In 1998, Lynch was tried and convicted of felony murder. She says she was coerced into a confession, and original DNA never linked her to the crime. But she was found guilty, and now she's asking New York State to authorize a new round of DNA testing in her case. Susan Friedman is a staff attorney at the Innocence Project. She's one of the lawyers currently representing Renee Lynch. Susan, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thank you for having me.
And Andrew Cohen is a senior editor at The Marshall Project and author of this week's Case in Point, which looks at the case of Renee Lynch. Hi, Andrew.
It's good to be here.
Thank you. So, Susan, tell us about your client, Renee Lynch, and what she was convicted of in 1998.
In 1998, Renee was convicted of accomplice felony murder, of the murder of a woman named Louise Soselsky in Amherst, New York. At the time, there was no physical evidence or eyewitnesses that linked her to a crime. But after a lengthy investigation by the police that ended up with no other arrests, they ended up coercing Renee Lynch. We believe they coerced her into a confession, where she admitted to being present at the time that another individual, Kareem Walker, killed Ms. Soselsky during a robbery.
So what was the prosecutor's case against Renee?
The only evidence that was presented at trial against Ms. Lynch was the confession that she gave, which she immediately recanted after she was outside of police custody, as well as testimony from a jailhouse informant named Raquel Hunter. Raquel Hunter admitted at the time of trial that she was testifying in exchange for a benefit from the prosecutor. And also, just before Ms. Lynch's trial, she also testified against another woman who was housed in the same jail as her in exchange for a benefit as well.
And just so our listeners are clear, back in 1998, what was the state of DNA testing? Was it even happening at then? Was it just in its early stages?
That was the very beginning of forensic DNA testing. And at the time of Ms. Lynch's trial, there was some rudimentary DNA test that actually identified foreign DNA at the crime scene. But the state of DNA has advanced significantly such that today we can actually identify the unique DNA profile of the person who was at the crime scene.
Okay. Andrew, how common are cases like this where the prosecutors have theories that conflict so strongly with evidence, but they still convict?
Right. This is one of the reasons why I picked this case from the choice of cases for this installment of Case in Point, because, you know, you see a lot of cases where a defendant proclaims his or her innocence and says that new DNA testing could generate a different result. But what you have here is you have the notion that the man who allegedly actually committed the killing, Walker, is said to have been in Florida at the time of the killing and so couldn't have done the killing. So how do you convict somebody of being an accomplice to a murder if the murderer could not have committed the murder? That's one of the things that sort of developed in the last couple of years as this case has wended its way through the courts. So the Lynch folks, the defense team here, is able to say, look, we have the need to retest this evidence, this old forensic stuff. It could reveal the character of someone. It could go back to something. And prosecutors and state attorneys, you should want it because there is clearly a mystery here about what exactly happened to the victim, who killed her in the end, if it wasn't Lynch and if it wasn't the person who was in Florida at the time. So we've done some work at the Marshall Project on these stories where you have prosecutors in different trials offering different conflicting versions of events to different jurors and the judges allowing it. So this is a little bit unlike that, but it's a little bit like that. And that's why we picked this case.
Andrew, how common is, I mean, I think we you know, we all watch CSI to a certain extent and kind of see a Law and Order. And like, how common is this in practice where the assumption is, well, as long as my DNA is tested, I'm clear, right? Or not?
Yeah. I mean, you know, one of the fascinating aspects of this, and I don't know if the Innocence Project wants to talk too much about it, but, you know, there's the possibility here that if they get the new testing, that the new testing somehow incriminates Ms. Lynch in a way that she hasn't been incriminated. I don't think it's going to change the outcome for her. She's still going to be serving a prison sentence in that context. But it is possible that the DNA information here, the new testing, generates a result that's more incriminatory. Now, that's not what they're banking on, right? The defense here is hoping that the DNA results if they're allowed to be produced, are going to point in a different direction, and quite rightly point to the fact that all across the country, there are hundreds of cold cases that essentially have been solved because of the advances in DNA technology and the fact that DNA databases now have so many more profiles in them from people across the country, there's more likely to be a match. So that's sort of the home run that the Lynch team is hoping for here, is that they get the testing is dispositive, it points to someone else, and somebody else happens to be sitting perhaps in a prison or jail somewhere who can be linked to all of this, in which case the case for actual innocence would be much stronger, and Ms. Lynch would have a much greater chance of being released at some point from prison.
Andrew, you also mentioned databases of DNA, and my internal privacy alarms just started ringing. Are you talking about criminal databases of DNA? Or are you talking about like 23andMe? Like, are we all of our DNA sort of getting tossed into the same bucket?
I don't think they're getting tossed into the same bucket. I think we're talking here about criminal databases from prisons and jails and folks who are processed through the system, folks who have records. Now, there's a whole other feature we could do about that, right? And privacy rights and how they're sort of the meshing of all these databases. But that isn't here. That's not what's happening here.
We're not here yet. How accurate, and I'll throw this question out as the last question to both of you, how accurate, I mean, we talked about the increasing accuracy of this, but how confident, I'm imagining someone who's asking for this, has got to be pretty confident that they didn't do it, right? If they're thinking, you can test the DNA and my DNA is not there. I mean, is that a pretty solid defense at this point?
Well, it's certainly a risk worth taking. The one other thing I want to say is that to a certain extent, Ms. Lynch here is lucky that she's in New York and not in a state like Alabama, where the standard for post-conviction DNA testing is much more stringent than it is in New York. We did a sort of a survey, thanks to the Innocence Project, of all these cases and all these states, and it really varies widely depending upon your jurisdiction of what you have to show to the judges at this stage of a case to actually get the testing that you hope for. So one of the lucky breaks, I guess you could say, for Ms. Lynch is the New York courts, if they're doing their homework and if they're applying the right standards, should be quite lenient in allowing this. We'll see if that works out that way, but that may be something in her favor.
Susan, any closing thoughts?
What we know is that in Ms. Lynch's case, her conviction is based on a confession, and in 28% of our post-conviction DNA exonerations, there has been a false confession. And likewise, she was also convicted based on the testimony from a jailhouse informant, and 16% of our post-conviction DNA cases, DNA exonerations, have included testimony from a jailhouse informant. And where we have such powerful DNA evidence that can prove to us what happened, it really is important to get to the truth and to do this testing.
Susan, Andrew, thank you so much for being with us on The Takeaway.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
Susan Friedman is a staff attorney at the Innocence Project, and Andrew Cohen is a senior editor at the Marshall Project.